Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. In this episode, I speak with Jackie McCassey. Jackie is founder of Girlfans, the photo zine pushing for increased female fan visibility, as well as a leading voice on female representation through campaigns with Nike, Liverpool and Copper 90, to name just a few. As well as the progress made during 10 years of Girlfans, we discuss the early influence of Liverpool's victory parades during the 1980s, the importance of play in formative years, and activism through creative output. A self-confessed non-academic student with a GCSE in needlework, we learn how she went on to become a senior lecturer in fashion and communication at Liverpool John Moores University with works archived in the British Library. Quite the turnaround. And why she might be spending a bit more time at the bingo hall. How you doing?
Hey. Yeah, good.
Is this red hinting at your club leanings?
Well, maybe. Yeah. A little bit.
So there we go. Yeah, nice. So I think we're both doffing our caps to one of the finest men's FA Cup finals of a generation today, back in 2006.
Oh, God. Yeah, exactly.
You'll have fonder memories than me.
I was going to say, yeah, it's really difficult to remember that, actually, because there are so many.
Easy for me to remember because that's the only one of my lifetime.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, there have been a few, right? There have been a few for us.
Yeah, hopefully we get a few more, but I won't hold my breath. When are we,
you never know. Look at last year,
Maybe we'll be dining out on that one for a few years to come.
Yeah,
I think.
And why not? Yeah. We do it all the time.
Fair enough. It's fair enough.
Every day.
Thanks for sparing the time. I know you're fitting this in around your work at the university and life in general. So I really appreciate it.
Welcome. Really, really happy to join it.
Oh, yeah. Pleasure. I mean, well, the pleasure's mine. I've been aware of you and your work since, well, I guess it would have been 2018 when I started NPLH magazine. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it happens. You just kind of acquire accounts
just it
comes up, and before you know it, people become the norm and part of you every day as you scroll through.
Absolutely, you know them really well,
and then you kind of realize that you don't, beyond the work that they're sharing. So this is a great opportunity for me to put some voices to faces, sometimes faces to work if the face is not so prevalent in front of the work. This is quite exciting for me because it was the Girls Fanzine that came to my attention first, and then you off of that.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how, because it's 6 years ago.
I know. And likewise, I think you've posted over the years, some really great images of women, like West Ham fans as well, particularly.
Oh, Georgina Hunt. That was our first issue.
I love her.
Yeah, she produced an amazing...
Oh, was it? It was the first one.
Yeah, that was an amazing shoot in the East Ham Working Man's Club.
Yeah, that's great.
By the old ground. She did a great job there. And that was kind of, I guess that set the tone. It felt important to represent as much of the game rather as possible in every issue. Although I guess sometimes... in hindsight, it may have felt like it was shoehorned in because it's easy for me. I mean, I'm a white, now middle-aged man, and I'm not often the best informed in certain areas of the game. And I guess
I think one of the biggest takeaways from the last 10 years and photographing people and working with lots of different people is the fact that, it's taken a while for the pennies to drop, anywhere. Like, even with clubs themselves, which I think was probably one of the most, was one of the strangest things, you know, the clubs themselves weren't particularly tuned into, they're tuned into their fan base, but they've become, of course, now very tuned in to their fan bases, wherever they are. But yeah, it was definitely that case. So I also think that if you go to games regularly or you have done or you've done for the last 40, 50 years and you're a man, you know, you're used to seeing women. You're used to seeing women of all age at the game. And so it wasn't a particularly, didn't feel like a radical thing to point them out.
Yeah.
But I think once you moved outside of the stadium and spoke to people who, I always say this, I do tend to repeat myself quite a lot, but you spoke to other people who didn't go to football, they just had this one view of what that football crowd looked like. And so it probably didn't feel like, like a radical thing to kind of photograph women and older women and make them part of the story, I guess.
Yeah, I guess what interests me about your work is that it's activism in the form of creative output rather than just solely creative output, because there's the message and point behind it is to increase visibility, representation. So I guess I'm curious as to what has driven that, what your experiences are as a fan growing up that drove this direction for you.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan growing up, a Liverpool fan. I always say this every time as well, bear with me, but my dad wasn't really into football, although now he definitely keeps an eye on Everton so we can actually join in our conversation. My mum would have known the most about football just from being out and about. So if anyone's ever been to Liverpool and other cities like Liverpool, you know, you walk around and you can't escape it. And so I always tell the story of my mum who used to go to the bingo. I've got to an age and I've got a child now, and I just realised this week why she used to go to the bingo quite a few nights a week. Just to get away from, like, I need my own space. I need to speak to other people. But they would give out, like, the scores for, like, Liverpool Everton at the interval in bingo on a Saturday afternoon. So, like, you know, everybody was interested in it. They'd give you the scores if you wanted it or not. And so she'd come home and say, oh, Liverpool didn't do very well today, did they? You know, and that was always there. But for me, it was the parades. I always say that first and foremost. It was the parades, because I'm not from North Liverpool, where Anfield is. I'm from South Liverpool, so Wavertree. So it's like Smithdown Road, which is kind of an iconic road. Now it's where all students, you know, kind of university students live. And my only connection to, like, seeing a footballer, if you go to the match, you see them on the pitch. My only connection would have been at parade, when you actually see them all, you know, and you see the managers and you see the goalkeepers, and they're like all waving at me from the bus. But I mean, obviously, privileged position, because there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
So it did feel kind of normal, I have
to
say.
A bit of a tradition.
And they often,
just a yearly tradition.
Yeah, and they often take a route, because they would have come in through Speke Airport in the south of the city, and then they weave their way through the city. So my mum used to take me to those. So she liked a bit of that spectacle. You know, going and watching that special. And I've said this before as well, sorry, I will come on to something completely different at some point. But, you know, like when Leicester won the league, and same when West Ham won in Europe, I'm thinking of all those kids who are like, that will be burned into their memory forever. Like, it never goes away, and it's so evocative. And, yeah, it's like that. It's like all of the most joyous things all in one, and it never leaves. And you're part of that community, whether you're a man, a woman, whether you've been to the match, you haven't been to the match. A lot of the Everton fans used to come out as well. we're in Everton shirts.
Right, yeah.
Because even they want to see it. And we used to go out, we went out as kids mid-A season, watched Everton when Everton won Cup Winners' Cup, was it? One of those. And so we'd go out and watch that. So there's a real connection there. You can't underestimate how that spectacle of a parade. You can't underestimate how much it impacts on, because that will be for a lot of people where they actually see a player almost face to face.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, they're looking at me, you know?
Yeah.
That sounds weird.
It's like a connection all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah, in 3D. So even now, you know, a lot of people can't get to games. A lot of people are priced out of games. Some people won't feel comfortable in a stadium, feel like they don't belong in a stadium, but everyone can go and see that. Everyone can go and see that parade if you are fortunate enough to win something, obviously. So, yeah, it's kind of burned in there. And along with the spectacle is also the clothing, the banners, the flags. At the time, it was like rosettes. That goes along with it. So I think as a young person who eventually went on to work and enjoy creativity and fashion design and communication and promotion and all of those things, it really resonated, and it's always been there at the back of my mind, although I might not have created any work around it until, you know, around 10 years ago. Didn't really create work related to it.
So what were your creative outlets looking like when you were younger? What informs that decision to go down the route that you did?
I guess a school teacher and a class in school. So my favourite subjects were like art, sport, and I don't know what name they called it. It would have been D&T.
Oh,
it would
have
been design and technology.
CDT when I was in school, yeah.
Yeah.
They threw
Do you know what my yeah, my GCSE from then is called needlework. I kid you not. I kid you not. It was called needlework. So we loved it. We like loved the teacher. And so we learned to make clothes. Didn't have a sewing machine, so I used to make clothes by hand. I used to hand stitch them. And then I got a sewing machine. My parents got me a secondhand sewing machine, and after that it was like we were off, we were flying. So yeah, me and a group of friends, we would just make clothes every week. We would make something, like we'd do tailoring and all kinds of things.
That's quite entrepreneurial.
It's quite entrepreneurial, but actually, on reflection, it was like nothing. It was women's work, I suppose. And at that point in Liverpool, I think, and that like early 90s, maybe to mid 90s as well, there were lots of factories still in Liverpool, but there are none now. There are none in Liverpool. Like if you wanted to get something made in Liverpool, you can't do it. Well, what happened is clothes became cheaper to buy than buying fabric and making your own. But I think we've kind of swung back again. And I suppose, so it was always creating. And so a lot of the work after the photography at the moment has been about tapping back into that and making. So, yeah, we just embraced making things. When I think back, we had really good skills, like really strong skills. Yeah, we'd enjoy making clothes. I think it was a pretty relaxed. I think school was a bit more relaxed. I'll just say that, you know. I don't think I was particularly academic, although I ended up as an academic, which is in itself is quite funny. But yeah, it's just that it's the joy in creating things.
Do you think that then feeds into creating unrelated things? So just the fact that you're in that.
Yeah.
Zone of making something makes it easier to access.
No, I think it relates
else.
To everything. I think, you know, creativity relates to things beyond the creative industries and beyond creative practice. And I think at the moment, in terms of education, creativity, being creative is difficult because we're being told that actually D&T or art and design or whatever you want to call it is not as important. I mean, Rishi Sunak wants everyone to study maths for an extra 2 years. I mean, I didn't like maths. That isn't to say that I'm not good at maths. I enjoyed other things. And so the value of it, I think, has been lost a little bit. So, yeah, so it was that. It was making. And then after a few years, and then I went to fashion college in Liverpool, which I really loved. And that was definitely more about, like, manufacturing and very technical. And then I worked a little bit. I mean, caveat there is... Liverpool in the 80s, I know we've all heard about it or what we think we know about it, but, you know, the UK was grim at that point. It was really grim. A few weeks ago, I was looking at one of Rob Bremner's amazing photographs popped up on Instagram. One of the comments was, I think it was he's done like quite an image that you can buy, and it's an image of a man and a woman. Everything, the backdrops, the locations all look post-war. It's right. Like everything's like crumbling. It's like 1980s. It's not that long ago. And the woman's maybe, or the guy's holding a quick save bag. And just in the comments, people are like, oh my God, the fashion is so cool. And I'm like, no, that's not. And it's funny how everyone views it through that fashion lens. No, that was like, they were real people standing in a road. It was grim. It was a really grim time, and a lot of people didn't have jobs, and there's a huge amount of poverty as there is now. And creativity, I guess, for us was the answer. Creativity just allows you a chance to play. It allows you a chance to dream. It makes you resourceful. It helps with resilience. I'm not sure that anyone would want to go through it, but you know, at that particular time. But just creativity was the answer. Also enjoying life. You know, trying to enjoy life on little money.
Yeah, I guess it's easy to forget we can even pursue that, right?
Yeah, I don't come from a wealthy family, but like, you certainly don't. I had a very, very happy childhood. And I've got a nice comparison because my son's 9, you know, and he doesn't want to do his homework. He wants to do other things. I don't remember getting any homework, certainly when I was in primary and junior school. So we were just allowed to play, allowed to develop relationships, allowed to develop our communication skills, allowed to be creative if you wanted to be. You know, not fake creativity where you go to a place and you all do a craft thing, right. like real creativity, we're allowed to think and just explore things yourself.
Self-expression.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose since then, I've never stopped being creative.
So did you meet any opposition from your parents in that respect?
No.
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 An interesting time in the kind of the country's history.
It is. And I think that sometimes I have that balance within me when I'm talking to my son about him not liking certain things. I have to reset myself and say, you know what, sometimes it's actually okay. It's like huge amounts of pressure on children, not enough outlets, don't really play out. You know, it's really difficult for them, and it's difficult for young people because obviously I teach, you know, young people in there. You know, they'd be around 20, 21 on the whole, and it's difficult for them. World is quite a scary place. So we often say when we're in the studio at university, Liverpool John Moores, you know, you're privileged, even though they're paying for their education, you're privileged because you're in this space where you can really express yourself before going out into the world. And so that little bit of freedom is good. I know not everyone might respond to freedom and personal expression. It depends who you are. But no, my parents were very supportive and very very laid back about it and supportive and just, yeah, why don't you try it? And yeah, that was it.
That's invaluable, really, at that age, and it's kind of paid off.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really hard because you don't really appreciate it until you get older, I guess.
Yeah. I get what you mean there. And a few realizations of my own lately, not related to creative output or anything like that, but just in terms of, like, yeah, parents.
Just respect. It's like respect on many levels.
Yeah, is that just understanding the methods and the approaches more with age, so there's, you know, less resentment and more respect and understanding.
Yeah, it's guidance, isn't it? You need guidance, but you don't need people to tell you exactly what to do. You just need to be guided, I think, in the direction. I know that sounds simplistic. It really does sound simplistic, but I try to remember it myself when I'm in situations.
So on that note, the guidance and not being told what to do, I'm thinking if that ties in nicely with the rise of visibility and representation of females in the male, in inverted commas, male football space.
Yeah.
Do you think that's where possibly some of the negative reaction comes from, because of it being quite not drastic, but these are not my words, but how some people may see it as being, for want of a better expression, rammed down my throat, and I'm expected to now accommodate, and again, inverted commas, my safe space.
I mean, there are certain people we could bring up, although we're not going to bring those people up, obviously. That would be making a lot of noise of late.
There's plenty of attention already.
Yeah, I mean, again, as you get a bit older and you reflect upon everything, if I think of myself in my teens and my 20s, you know, I wouldn't have said I was a radical feminist, because I wasn't really, I said I wasn't academic, I wasn't really aware of that. Things were just the way they were, I guess. But similarly, I wasn't brought up to be in any way subservient, if that makes sense. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing. It's quite equal, I guess, in terms of my parents, they're quite equal. I know that's not always the case. Culturally, it's not the case, you know. It depends when you're born and where you're born, and it's not always the case. But I do think, the 10 years that I've worked on the zine, oh my God, night and day. You know, if a 21-year-old now could go back then and see what football looked like, particularly in the media, it's just radically different. You know, like I say, it took a long time for the penny to drop, I think, within football culture, the media, the clubs. But, you know, sometimes it takes a long time for the penny to drop with yourself. You know, it just does, you know. And then you reflect on your own situation. And so you become very, very in tune. I think what it does, you're in tune to things. In terms of it being like, as you've said, you know, I call it pushback. I had many conversations recently with men and women about it's pushback. I think every now and again, when a tide turns, you'll get an element of pushback. But obviously, with a new generation of people, young people, you have to keep on. So I guess, you know, or if you speak, you know, I speak to people internationally now and they tell me about what it's like in their country, what football grounds are like, what football culture's like, you know, it's not isolated, is it? You know, it's still happening, you know, daily, different parts of the world, but also there are more serious things going on in other parts of the world as well. I think it's just pushback. But actually what I'd say about recent comments about pundits on social media is it's already happened. You know, certain people need to pipe down because it's already happened. So when I meet like young girls who are like 8, 9 and playing football, there is no difference to them. You know, so in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, when they're pundits, yeah, there will be no difference. So it's a kind of it's almost like an unstoppable force. But we do have to keep talking about it. But I think it's already happened. I think the gates have opened. I think women are there. They're present in football culture. Running a long project, a sort of ongoing, never-ending project, means that we've spoken to like loads of people who are studying for BAs, MAs, PhDs. They want to be journalists. They want to work in sports science. They're already there. So it will be part of everyday life, football culture, media. There's makers, creators. Yeah, they're already there. And they have sisters and cousins and mums and, you know, wives who see it as a normal thing. And I actually think because of the Lionesses, of course we know the Lionesses winning the Euros was huge, but I can see it within my own family, you know, that just in like a year or so, the view of women's football is incredibly different, even with my son. It's not something that I ever made a fuss of or said anything negative about, but it's just, it's there now. It's accepted already, you know?
I've always, I guess, kind of marvelled at the absurdity of the double standards in the criticism that comes at the level of women's football. And I don't think it's a massive leap to suggest that the guys that make these comments are dragging their girlfriends down to their Dog and Duck FC Cup final on a Sunday afternoon and expecting them to watch. If you like football, you watch football, right? It doesn't matter what the standard is. Do you like football or not?
It's clickbait, but obviously what we have in the country and the world now, people have that route, don't they, through where they can openly say whatever they think, which feels really dangerous. But yeah, we just have to keep on doing what we do. You just have to keep on doing it, and tides turn. But I think what it is a lot of the time is like it's slow. It's not going to, you know, you can't turn anything around. You just can't. You know, when I think about it now, it's 10 years making the zine. That's quite a long time. But actually, you just have to keep going. It's like not going to turn around. It can be generational. Unfortunately, it's not going to change quickly. And I think that's probably frustrating more than anything.
Why photography and the zine as a vehicle?
Oh, why photography? I'm sure I've thought about this loads of times. Well, first of all, I remember writing a bid. It was a small bid at my previous institution, so I got a small amount of money to print it. And I had to say what it was. So you have to state what it is before you make it. And then who might be interested in it. And the bid was, I've looked at it and it was pretty bad. My bid writing has, yes, definitely got a bit better over the time. Yeah, and it was like, I think sports brands will be into it, other fans, clubs, there was a whole list. Really, it was to just mimic, because we're in Liverpool and, you know, got that huge depth in history of like football fanzines, football success. Really, it was to mimic a program or a football fanzine. So I definitely wanted it in print. It was in newsprint because, you know, you could just roll it up and take it into a ground. And on the very last page, it had like a pink page, you know, like the pink paper.
Yeah.
And on the back page, it had, because the zine, I should explain, is like ethnographic. So it's ethnography. So it's like going back to the same group of people over a period of time. So you don't get a snapshot, you get like more of an in-depth view of what that group of people might look like. And so it's developed over one season. And so the pink page at the back used to have the results from that season. So like you won the league or you were just mid-table or, yeah, you know. But I've pointed out recently that it was 2013-14. So it was when Liverpool almost won the league. You know, so
the
it was
one
like,
point. Was it the 1 point?
It wasn't that actually. It was one of the games where Gerrard slipped and has received abuse from it ever since. It was that season, Suarez, SOS.
I think the Palace game is Ridge. Arguably the game that should be looked at more. Was it Palace away with a 3-0 lead?
I know. I know. I remember watching it with like disbelief. It was disbelief. Yeah. There were a few, weren't there? It was Arsenal. Yeah, there were a few. So there was a huge amount of excitement. But actually, a few years ago, I realised that actually the women's team won the WSL in 2013 and 2014.
Oh.
Back to back. So I know moving in the football circles at the time, when I never heard that. Like, nobody mentioned it. Like, nobody talked about the women's team. So it shows you in the city the whole dynamic of Liverpool's success and Everton men's team as well. It's almost like there's hardly any space to, like, even talk about the women's game. I don't think anyone was going out of their way to be particularly sexist because you could look at the club's role in developing those teams as well. But there was no space, but that happened at the same time. And so there I am documenting the women at the men's game when actually it was the women's team that were being successful.
How interesting.
Yeah,
right under your nose. Is. And it's just...
right under your nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the coverage is just not there.
Absolutely. It was... I mean, obviously a lot of people remember it and they had, you know, they had fans back then, but I didn't know what was going on. So... Because my degree was in fashion promotion, I did a BA and MA in fashion promotion, and because it was in that, like my skills I thought were, I use the word graphics loosely in terms of the zine, because, you know, yeah, it's like mostly imagery. It's kind of a photo book though. It's a photo book really because it just contains photographs. And then I would put like the results on some pages, you know, so I'd done like a day's work there and then I'd put the results just so you could connect. For me, it's like connecting the people, their fandom, the way they dress, but also the fact that the results reflect the fact that the football is also important. It's all of those things together. But really it was just experimenting, I guess. With the first one, yeah, and that was how it started, I guess.
And how has the impact of that shaped the way the project has evolved in the years since?
I mean, it's really shaped it from creating it. Then I had my son, so I waited a while before it was released, but. My colleague at the time, Adam Murray, was a photography lecturer. Does his fashion, teaches fashion as well. He took the Liverpool zine to, will I remember? He took it to Tate for their photo book event. Not off print. Is it off print? Yeah. So it went there. So obviously him taking it there exposed it to a lot of different kinds of people, I guess. And then 2015-16, I did the same at Everton. Obviously, have to do that. Again, gives you time to then really get into like what their fan base is around and be around them, and just as exciting, isn't it, on match day, you know, even if you don't support that team. And then Adam kindly took it to Printed Matter in New York. Alongside his own work, and again that sort of got it out there a little bit to a whole very interesting audience who are interested in photo books, photography, art. You know, and every now and again you get like an email from someone to say they'd seen it. And so it was really slow. Yeah, and it just grew from there. But on the back of that, Manchester City got in touch and wanted to collaborate on the third scene, which was quite interesting. And it was Pep's first year in charge. Now I reflect on that, I'm like, why did I do that? but that was a great experience because it allowed me to move from Liverpool and Everton, who were in this residential area, you know, pretty similar residential areas, quite close to each other, to go, then go into a ground that is like purpose-made city square. They've got bars and cafes and they're doing like selfie shots and, you know, just feels more like corporate and organized in that way. So that was a very, very different experience again. And I went to like about 13 games, largely outside. I did go into some, but yeah, city, isn't it? So went into some games and I was like, oh, great. Which was lovely, and then published that. So I think with that one, there was a lot more content. And Liverpool and Everton scenes, I worked with a fantastic photographer in Liverpool called Alex Hurst. And then the Manchester City scene, I got some students from LJMU. They took some of the images, and another photographer, Zoe Hitchin. So I've always worked with like really good people on them as well.
There's the... Location aside and the difference in match day setting and experience, putting that to one side, did the fact that this is a club collaboration change the approach or the...
No, they just let me do it, and I did all the editing as well. None of it was edited by them.
That's great. So there was no compromise in what was a creative outlet had then become a paid for product.
Yeah, no, they didn't see it until it was done. Yeah, no. So they paid for it, but it wasn't, they saw the final print, the final publication.
Is that something that you had agreed on beforehand? It was important to you to retain full kind of creative control?
Yeah, but I also think they... probably from the two fanzines they'd seen, they probably thought, yeah, that's what we want.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot more than that, isn't it, photography, you know? And my friend Zoe always explains it beautifully. When people say you have that eye, whatever that means.
I've definitely been guilty of saying that myself. Go on, I'm ready to be pulled apart now.
Yeah, we all say it, everybody. It's got that eye. She said it's just what I'm not necessarily, I think we train ourselves within football culture and a lot of the bigger platforms go for this. It's like we love to see a person covered in badges. We love to see a person head to toe in the gear, slightly eccentric maybe. That's what we think of when we think of football culture. Big tattoos. Yeah, we just like to see that. And, of course, visually it looks great. But going into those games, going around the grounds for me wasn't just that. I like to photograph the people that aren't dressed like that. I like to photograph the people that are like that. Tattoos, you know, custom-made kind of garments maybe. Those that you can tell it's like first game and they're wearing a scarf and they're not really bothered in some instances because they're going with someone else. So it's trying to capture all of that because I think then you get that 360 view of what that fan base is like. And so I think, and I worked with someone in the research part of Man City, City Football Group, the head of research of City Football Group. There was maybe a trust that that's what I would capture and that's what they would get, you know. Yeah, so it's always been for me academic research alongside what I do when I teach. It's just always how you frame something, I guess. It's always how you frame it. And yeah, it was sheer visibility. Like there was, it was visibility. It was quite literal.
The aim of the project was clear to you from the outset. But could you have foreseen the, I guess, the impact it has had, and also on your own career, I guess? I mean, like your Instagram, sorry, your Twitter feed, rather, is have I read this right? It's archived?
Yeah. Yeah, British Library archive certain websites. I mean, the Girlfans website is archived and I haven't changed it in about 4 years. Do not go on the website. It's under reconstruction, like massively. It's going to be an archive website, actually, where we can archive like all of the images, not just an edited certain amount. But I'm just looking for sponsorship at the moment to get it up and running.
I'll keep that bit in.
Keep that bit in. No, not at all. But I guess I do. I work on a lot of, I really enjoy within fashion and fashion communication, the trend and insight part of it. Being able to take in like a large quantity of research and then translating that. So I don't think it was a, mistake in terms of, I'll just try this project and see where it lands. Because I think once you've taught a subject for a long time, you know, the amount of information that we take in on a daily basis is huge. And then we're talking to students about that. So we're constantly reading and seeing so much information. So someone described it as my cultural capital. So it's everything that you've seen, that you've read, that you've experienced. And I suppose it just comes out as these creative projects. So I think in terms of trends and insights, I obviously thought that there was, I was contributing to something that maybe didn't exist or existed in a small way. But there's great value sometimes if you're able to in just trying something else. You know, I know sometimes people work on projects and it's like, okay, the website's going to take 3 years and the idea is this. And I just think it's better to just put it out for me. Otherwise it will stay in a notebook or in your head forever. So I'm an advocate for like just starting something and doing it.
That's really good advice because I've got that notebook right here full of all sorts of stuff.
I mean, I have got a giant notebook there, but
that's a hardback as well. You really are taking some serious notes. So there's some sound advice in there. And I guess it can sometimes be a bit of,
it can be debilitating, can't it?
Yeah, fear of what you kind of want it to be versus what it looks like at the initial stages. And there's always that gap between what you see in your head and what you're able to do at that moment, right?
Absolutely. And also, it reflects my personality in a way because some people are very methodical and want to get it, you know, right. And I completely understand it. I mean, I look back at the zine now and I'm like, why did I do that? You know, now I have to carry it on as well, which is even more annoying because it's like the girl fans really irritates a lot of people because there's no hyphen. It's not a separate word. So I do teach fashion, yeah, branding and communication, but don't obviously follow me on everything. sometimes those mistakes, I quite like that it's not perfect as well because it is a zine. It's self-expression.
Yeah,
it's personal
true.
Expression as well. It's like it looks how it looks for a reason because that's the way I wanted it to look. I'm not a graphic designer. It was originally called Fangirls, but we thought, yeah, I remember talking to Alex about it and she was like, she's big into music. She was like, that's a really derogatory term. And I was like, well, I quite like it because you know. So those decisions come from somewhere, don't they? You know, and hence why there's no space or hyphen for anyone that it particularly bugs.
There's a good bit of trivia for us there then. But eventually like the name becomes the thing or the thing becomes the name, whichever way that works. It's like, yeah, too much thought can go into that. And before you know it, it's not really what it's called anymore. It's what it is, right? MPLH is the same thing. It doesn't have anything to do with football in the title.
I've been tempted to separate it a few times and I'm like, no, I'm not going to separate it.
Yeah, just don't. It's too late now.
I'm not going to do it. It can just annoy people forever.
At least they're talking about something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's such a great takeaway, I think, is to just, and that's something I've heard increasingly over the past maybe like six or so conversations.
And I think it loops back to what you said about making a zine and why photography and why in print. Because over the years, I've met so many people who are good at, you know, the three women from Celtic who got period products into the ground on the ball. Well, theirs was a petition. Yeah. So mine was photography and print. Yours might be writing. It might be art. It might be clothing. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like everybody is contributing to that conversation. And if it's about a lack of representation or about racism or about, for me, I think it's veering heavily towards class as well. I think class has probably been the barrier for a lot of people in their lives, you know. And bear in mind, I am at a university. I come from a working class background. And even though I'm a lecturer, I still think I'm working class because I just do. And there are lots of doors, glass ceilings, whatever you want to say, that feel very closed. If you are from a working class background, lower socioeconomic group, to fit in. And so I always said with Girl Fans, it was really simple. It was to create a sense of belonging by appearing in the zine, you know, which, and it still is to a sense, but then it still is in terms of me as a lecturer. You know, where does belonging come from? How do you belong to a group of people or a community or whatever? I think that's important. I'm focusing more and more on class because I think they are the barriers, particularly in education. And that ambition of like where you want to be. You know, I loved school, but I know in certain classes, when they were talking about going to do A-levels in university, they weren't talking to me and they weren't talking to my friends. And so going back to something you asked earlier on about the like career and stuff, in Liverpool, in like after I'd left college and worked for a bit, it was total whim, by the way. My friend decided to go to university in Salford to do interior architecture. And I was like, oh, okay. Let me see some of your prospectuses that were all in prints. Ooh, that sounds like an interesting course. I'll apply for it. I mean, there you go. Because obviously going to university now is an industry, isn't it? You know, you've got the accommodation, you've got this, you've got that. It's an industry. There's a pathway that people take. Then it was kind of like, I'll apply late and see if they'll take me on. And so I think, coming from my background, which was, like I say, a very, very happy background. It was, you know, wasn't wealthy. We weren't affluent, but I was incredibly happy. University was transformative for me. It was transformative. And I think, I'm not sure that all students now see university as transformative. They see it as a thing to do. So again, you know, we valued being there. We respected the tutors. We were like, we wanted to learn and we wanted to do well and have those experiences. So yeah, I'd say university was transformative and changed a lot of things, if not just your confidence.
It's incredible that for someone who wasn't academic,
who has a GCSE in needlework.
Yeah, GCSE in needlework is now kind of lecturing at a prestigious university. Needlework is as archived footage with the British Library and is spearheading campaigns for representation within sport. It's quite the turnaround.
But it starts somewhere, doesn't it? It always starts somewhere. It's just that you need guidance, a little bit of help, the right people. Your mindset's important, and I'm aware that not everyone can always be in a great place, but I've generally been quite a positive person, you know, but it's driven by that. It's driven by creativity, whatever that means, and the wanting to create, but also the joy in creating whatever it is.
Would you say that the freedom to create and the fact that built momentum for you to continue creating in whatever way that looked like has aided that mental disposition that you mentioned there?
Yeah, possibly.
Things?
No, I think possibly. There is a timeline there of things that I've done. I mean, last summer, I work in a beautiful art school with lots of incredible technical spaces. But because I didn't do traditional, I didn't do a foundation course as it was then, where you try a little bit of everything, you know, a lot of the students haven't done that now. I'd never screen printed, you know. We've got a fantastic screen print studio. So before I went to Australia to the Women's World Cup, I was like, right, I'm going in there to screen print. And had to wait till teaching was finished. So yeah, it's time to do it. I knew I wasn't going to pick it up really quickly. It took a few weeks, and then I was like away. And again, oh, the pleasure of being able to do something with so many processes.
Yeah, and you don't mind being bad. Is that so? Are you okay with being bad at something initially? Like you find a lane and you get to a level in it, and then you try something new. And I guess this is this can be off putting for me personally.
Yeah, it can be for a lot of people actually. No, I just try it. Yeah, just try it. I mean, I was quite sporty. I was sporty when I was younger, and so I did try golf about 10 years ago, and I was dreadful. And yeah, that was really disappointing. Because I think when you're quite good at sport, you think you're going to be great at everything.
I think golf is a leveler for anyone, though.
Oh my God, it's so hard. It's so difficult. I knew learning to screen print, I thought, well, I am not going to be amazing at it, you know? But you just have to find your way through it. But like, I suppose having time is a privilege now, isn't it? Especially in the current climate. You know, even young people now who are at university, they work a lot more outside of university. There's the cost of living. So finding that time is really hard. And that's why if you are fortunate enough to have to pay for your degree in a creative subject, don't waste a second. Don't waste a second doing it, because it is access to all of those things is pretty special.
Do you find yourself reinforcing that message to students now?
Definitely. You know, and that whole trust the process thing, I suppose when you've taught a long time, you know, I mean, LinkedIn is great for this, right? You can see where the students have gone. Over 20 years, like they've got their own businesses, and they're, you know, that is great. We know it works. So I still believe in university as that place to go, especially art and design related courses and fashion courses, in allowing you time to experiment and to play. Big advocate for play, getting things wrong, just trying things. You just don't get that time otherwise. You just don't get it. Being able to share those things as well and talk to other people about those things and build your confidence if that's what's needed. It's often what's needed. it's really important. It's just a shame people have to pay, young people have to pay for it.
Well, one more question just to finish up, because I know I've kept you for a bit and I should probably get back to work as well. I'll cut that bit. Do you feel a sense of responsibility now that this body of work you've created is 10 years old and it's obviously gained a lot of momentum and had impact and people will probably be relying on it to a degree? Do you feel a responsibility with that? And does that weigh on the creativity in any way?
Yeah, I mean, it always weighs on me in terms of choices. I haven't worked with a lot of brands, and that's because I don't know if I always fit with what they want to kind of communicate and talk about. And I'm very aware that whoever I align myself with is quite a big thing, which is why we're launching the Get Your Kits Out Festival, because then it's a different kind of thing. Not to say that I'll be working with loads of brands on that, but it's a different outlet. But yeah, I'm always conscious of that. Always conscious of, if I get emails from people, I check out who it is thoroughly. Because of that, you know, and what their intentions are. But I think anybody that works in that space probably does.
Well, thank you for the work that you're doing. The problem is obviously in front of everyone, but it takes someone to grab these things by the scruff of the neck and do something about it. And you're one of those people. And I'm sure that when the day comes that, you know, you hang up your boots, so to speak, the work and impact will be looked on favourably and with a lot of gratitude.
Oh, that's a lovely thing to say. Hopefully I'll never pack up the boots.
No, just reduce the minutes.
Just pull back a little bit. Yeah, but yeah. Oh, that's a lovely thing to say. Thank you. Yeah, that was lovely. I enjoyed that. It's really lovely to talk about creativity.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed that. It's really interesting for me to hear where it all comes from. So that was a real privilege. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was really good. Enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button and I'll see you next time.